All right, you guys, we are going to jump into this message, and being a dad's a lot of fun. It really is. We do things that moms don't, like tell our kids pretty good fibs, all right? I've told you some of the ones that my dad has told me, but I want to give you some. I looked online at some of the lies that dads have told kids that are funny, and please, dads, just know this. God's okay with these type of lies, okay? And if you want to take these, go ahead and take these and use these. One dad, he was trying to get his kid to brush his teeth for more than 9 seconds. So he got his son a new toothbrush, and he says, "This is a smart toothbrush. It has Wi-Fi to my phone. It lets me know exactly how long you've been brushing your teeth." And then he would go online and he would get graphs off of like Google Images and show his kids, "See, this says that you didn't do it long enough." One dad told his kids that wheat bread is brown because it has chocolate hiding in it. Try to get your kid to not just eat Wonder Bread. "Do you taste it? I do." One dad tells his kids that, see all the cameras all over the place? See them on at restaurants, security cameras? He says, "They are all directly fed to the North Pole and Santa's always watching." And he's at the restaurant. The kids are like, "Dad, I don't think that's true. I know you say that." And he's like, "Ask the waiter." And he asks the waiter, and the waiter, the kid asks the waiter, "Do all of these actually report back to Santa?" And the waiter goes, "Shh, you're gonna get Santa to fire me." Plays along with him. But it's not always just what we say to kids. It's also what kids say that is an absolute blast, right? This one dad tells of his kid. He tells his kid to go to his room to clean up. And she's like 3, and she walks. And she turns around. She's like, "You're not the boss." She takes a couple more steps. "Barack Obama's the boss." It keeps going. I think that is so funny. My own 4-year-old told my Gavin, he's 14 now. He told my mother-in-law Cindy, it was during summertime. She got a sunburn. You know that time where your skin is about to peel, but it's not peeling yet. You know that area of and Gavin, my 4-year-old's looking at her, and he's like, "You're old, aren't you?" And my mother-in-law says, "I am." "Why do you say that?" Which you should never say, okay? Never ask a kid to he goes, "Yo, rusty skin." You know, when we're kids, and our kids, they never know what not to say. Isn't that the truth? They never know what to hold back and what to let out. We're parents, and we've all been at grocery stores when our kid says something that you just wish you could put back inside of their mouth. They never know what to say, what not to say. But as we get older and as we become adults, the pendulum swings, not from keeping things in our mouth, but to start becoming too quiet, right? To start being too quiet, to not say stuff. Where is the proper area that we should land? When should we speak out, and when should we keep it in? When should we be quiet? When should we fight for things? What should we fight for, and what should we tolerate? That's exactly the message that I want to be talking this morning. What should we tolerate? Is tolerance a sin or a virtue? Now, if you look at things that our politicians say or our celebrities say, you would assume that tolerance is one of the greatest virtues that one can have. We've got, I want to read a couple quotes. Loretta Lynch, our former U.S. Attorney General, says this. She says, "I think that overall, the position on a whole host of issues..." Let's just real quick before we keep going. She's saying, "I think overall, on all of these issues that are in front of us, the position that we should take on all of these issues should always be towards inclusion and equality. It should always be towards tolerance and affirmation and acceptance on all levels." Stan Lee, you guys know Stan Lee. Stan Lee is co-creator of Marvel characters, the comic books, and helped produce some of the movies. I love the Marvel movies. And he's a horrible actor in all of the Marvel movies, if you guys saw him. He says this: "Sooner or later, if man is ever to be worth his destiny..." How many of you guys want to be worth your destiny? Okay, Stan Lee's going to tell you how right now. If you want to be worth your destiny, we must fill our hearts with tolerance. John Inslee, Governor of Washington, when he made his state a sanctuary state, he said, I just signed an executive order reaffirming our commitment to tolerance. You know, when you look at what politicians say and celebrities say, you would think tolerance is one of the greatest virtues. But tolerance doesn't just stay up in Washington and in Hollywood. Tolerance has entered into a lot of the pulpits today. I want to read you a couple things that pastors have said. Pastor of out in Michigan, Pastor Ian Lawton, his church was called Christ Community Church. But he changed the name because he said the name Christ is too offensive to people. Now they call it the C3 Spiritual Community. He says, our community has been really open-minded community for some years now. We have a number of Muslim people, Jewish people, Buddhists, atheists. We're catching up to ourselves. I mean, you guys know when you accept everything, you actually stand for nothing. Isn't that the truth? We got, let me tell you, Shane Hipps, he was the co-pastor over at Mars Hill Bible Church. He says this, all religions are valid. And that even Osama bin Laden has this divine spark within him. Christianity is merely one of the sails that may be used to catch the wind of God's spirit. May just be one of the winds. Tolerate, accept, make everything okay. Brian McLaren, he's one of the leaders of the emergent church. He says, if the church doesn't move off its staunch stance on the Bible, then it's going to render itself irrelevant. Listen, I gotta tell you right now, tolerance is not one of the greatest virtues. Tolerance, as we're gonna find out, is actually one great sin. Now it depends, we have to define what we mean by tolerance, because tolerance has an old definition and it has more of a modern definition. You know, if you think of tolerance as the old definition, then I can get on with this. I like this definition. It means this. It used to mean treating with integrity, dignity, and humility a person whose opinion I consider to be untrue or invalid. You know, that's a good thing. Look, if someone's got a different way of life, I can still be kind and I can still get along and I can still be okay, but not think what they're doing is right and true and godly, right? But that's not the new definition. The modern definition, it means the acceptance of every viewpoint as equally true and equally valid. That's the real world that we're in today. Accept the full homosexual agenda as right and correct. Accept gender fluidity as right and correct. Be politically correct on everything you do. Don't judge, don't offend, and do not impose your truths on others. Is that about what we see in today's world? What does the Bible say about this kind of tolerance? We know what politicians say. We know what some woke pastors say. But what do politicians say about tolerance? We're going to look at the book of Eli. That is a movie, though. Okay. We're going to look at, so everybody get your popcorn. Let's turn the movie on. We're going to look at the life of Eli. And we're going to see what God shows us about tolerance through his life. Now we need to understand how remarkable of a man Eli was. Eli held two of the greatest positions in all of Israel. He was the judge and the high priest. The judge was basically Israel's closest thing to a king, right? In the book of Judges, you remember that? That is one of the judges. He's one of the judges. He's actually the last judge. And God would personally pick who the judge was. And the judge's job was to be a civil leader, a kingly leader, and deliver the people through God's supernatural help out of oppression. That was the job of the judge. But he was also the high priest. And the job of the high priest was to be the religious leader of the nation of Israel. And so we don't really know a lot of Eli's early years, because we meet him, he's older in life, but he must have been pretty remarkable for God to give him both of those positions. when we meet Eli in the Bible in 1 Samuel, he's already an older man. Now we get to actually see what's going on. He was a good man. He had reverence for the ark. He had reverence for the temple. You know, he loved God. He raised up Samuel to be to hear the voice of God, to love God's laws. He dealt kindly with Hannah. He seemed like a pretty great guy, but at the end of Eli's story in the Bible, we find him dying disgraced. His two kids dying disgraced. We find the Ark of the Covenant taken. We find Israel defeated. We find that the high priest line is stripped from Eli's heritage. How could someone who seemed to be doing so right end so wrong? Well, that's exactly what I want to look at. What was the fatal flaws that led Eli down the path to such an end? Because I'm going to tell you right now, as we answer this question, we're going to see how relevant this story is for us today. You guys want to start reading into this? All right, we're going to first start with the times in which Eli lived. Now, we don't have to pontificate the times. We don't have to imagine what the times were like. We could just go right to the Bible and find out what the times were like while Eli was both judge and high priest. See, the book of Judges ends, it's chronological to the book of 1 Samuel. So Judges closes, 1 Samuel opens up, and in 1 Samuel, Eli is already up in age. If you look at the last book of Judges, the last verse of Judges, it's Judges 21:25. It tells what the times that Eli reigned were like. Judges 21:25 says this: "In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. It was a time of moral digression. It was a time where they had lost their moral compass, that they were doing whatever their selfish desires wanted. Can I ask a question? Does that feel like the time we live in right now? Seem like everybody does what is right in their own eyes. You know, we share this time with Eli, a time where people don't even believe in absolute right and absolute wrong. Do you guys know that? You know, at the core of all of our controversies that we have, at the core is this: the battle between good and evil. What's righteous and what's unrighteous. You look at all of our great social controversies: abortion, the gender debate, homosexuality, transgenderism, political correctness, CRT. Do you know at the core they are all the exact same? They're simply this: good versus evil. It was the same at his time, and it's the same at our time. I mean, do you guys ever look out and see the things that are going on inside of our nation and think, how can anybody with a sane mind believe this? I don't care if they're Christian or not. How can anybody that has a working brain not see how bad this is? I want to read real quick before we jump back into Eli. God actually answers that question. When we look out and we see just the utter turmoil, and we see the lives being ruined, and the lives being ruined, but being paraded around as being a righteous and doing what what the society says they should. The Lord gives us in Romans an answer to that question. I want to answer that before we go any further. Romans 1, we're going to read 21 through 22 and 24. He says this: "For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculation. They were unable to produce useful thoughts. God gave them over to a futile mind, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they actually became fools." That is what we see going on. "Therefore, God gave them over in the lusts of their hearts." Listen, that is exactly what we see going on in the nation around us today. That is what we see with the Dodgers. That is what we see with all of these other Bud Light. They've been given over to a futile mind. They are like Eli, doing what is ever right in their own eyes. Like Eli's time, we have evil parading around as righteous. Now, in Eli's time, who was the judge and who was the high priest? This is important to see. See, God put it on Eli. He gave Eli his power to be judge and the religious leader. And this is where we start seeing Eli's breakdown. Because instead of standing up for what was right, instead of championing for righteousness, he was too afraid to stand up for righteousness. That's what I'm saying. Where am I right now? Although Eli lived a righteous life, he was afraid to confront the wickedness around him. Do you guys understand this? This was why God put him there in that time. He was supposed to, like all the other judges, turn the nation around, repent, and go forward with God. But he tolerated too much. He accepted too much. He didn't stand up for righteousness. So instead, unrighteousness started having its day. He adapted to the times rather than using his God-given role to stand up for the times. Now, unlike Eli's day, we don't have one judge and one high priest, do we? Who has God called up to stand for righteousness in our day? Everybody take your finger and point at you. We are. Who is God placed up to stand in the place of other people who are getting breakdown and are buying the lie of the world? Us, not one guy. And the question before us today is, are we going to stand and be too tolerant of the evilness, or are we going to stand up and fight for what God calls righteousness? And every one of us has to make that decision in their own life. What will we do? That's why I'm so excited as I read what's going on with Target, because that is exactly what's happening. People saying enough is enough and standing up for righteousness and trying to push out unrighteous evil things out of our society. If you don't know what's going on at Target, I'm just going to fill you in briefly. Target decided to make this huge homosexual section, huge section inside of their stores right up front. And they are, this is preying on little kids type of clothing, all right? They had bathing suits that are for boys, but that are a girl's bathing suit that you get what I'm saying. They had satanic stuff on the shirts inside the store. And finally someone said, I am not going to tolerate it any longer. And a boycott started. And I read this morning that Target's market cap has lost $15.7 billion. Billion with a B. Kevin O'Leary, who if you watch Shark Tank is Mr. Wonderful, but he's definitely not wonderful, right? He was doing an interview and he said this. He said, listen, all of the boards and the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are looking at Target right now. They're watching what is happening. When all the people that stand up, I'm sure a lot of you are in this boycott. When we boycotted Target, it wasn't just for Target. All of the other companies are hearing our voice saying that we will not stand back. We will not tolerate. We will not accept everything. We will stand for righteousness. And it's sending this message through this woke America culture that you can't just push evil anymore. But Eli did not take those type of stands. He did not stand in that way. He just accepted what was going on. He adapted to the times. What Eli tolerated soon started touching his family. What Eli tolerated out there soon started to make way inside his family. Dads, I want to tell you this. This is true. Take this as a warning. What we tolerate, we actually push. What we allow makes way inside of our families. What we allow our kids to do and think, what we tolerate and what we don't stand up for starts to change our kids. We're gonna read about his kids right now. It says in 1 Samuel 2:12, you know, one day he just woke up and he looked out and he saw his kids were pagans. 1 Samuel 2:12 says, "Now the sons of Eli were useless." Other translations say worthless men. They did not know the Lord. Like too many parents today, Eli was way too permissive with his kids. He was too tolerant of a judge, and he was too permissive as a father. Instead of calling out and rebuking the sins of his kids, which were great, the Bible tells us that they stole, that they seduced, that they took bribes, and they took by force. Instead of standing up and rebuking his kids and teaching him, he was permissive. No doubt he prayed that God would change him, but he didn't stand up to be the change inside of his kids. And one day God sent a prophet to him. I'm not going to read it. And the prophet says to him, to Eli, he says, "Why do you honor your kids above me?" See, Eli was too permissive. He dishonored God rather than standing up for what was right. Eli, as a priest, was too tolerant, and as a father, too permissive. You know, if we tolerate sin and we keep tolerating it inside of our families or inside of our workplace, and we start calling things not sin, and we start allowing things, we push God out. Do you realize that? You know, something that Heather and I have done for, I don't even know how many years now, we do something in the summer called Secular Free Summer. Because I am not gonna, I am the gatekeeper of what goes into my kids' minds. You understand that? And for the summer, we say it's secular free summer. The movies that we're gonna watch, they're all gonna be Christian. For summer, you don't get to watch a movie that's not Christian unless we all decide to have a family movie night. But anytime you turn on the TV, it's Christian during summer. And when you're in the car, you guys, my kids are at the age where when they get in the car, it's all about music. Isn't that frustrating? There's like, can I have your phone? But when you get in the car, it's all Christian music. That's what we do. Because I am going to decide what goes on in my kid's mouth. I'm not just going to accept everything that comes in. When we tolerate everything like we're going to see right here, we push God away. We push him out of our families. We push him out of our nation. Just a couple chapters later, Israel goes, we're going to read it, 1 Samuel 4. Israel goes to fight the Philistines to take back land that they had, land that was theirs. And they go and fight and they lose. God was not with them on this day. 4,000 people die. And so the army sends Eli's worthless sons to go get the Ark of the Covenant. And they sneak in and they grab the Ark. See, the army didn't think that God was going to be with them now. They were just treating it as a superstitious box that would give them special power. And Eli and Hophni, they come, they bring the Ark. And I want to read to you what happens. It gets worse. God abandons them totally. 1 Samuel 4:10-11, this is what happens. So the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated, and every man fled to his tent, and the slaughter was very great, for there fell of Israel 30,000 foot soldiers. And the ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. Tragedy is complete. Israel's routed, 30,000 people die, including Eli's two sons. One man runs back to Eli. He runs back to Israel. Verse 17 through 18, he brings Eli the news. Then the one who brought the news replied, "Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there's also been a great slaughter among the people. And your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God has been taken." And when he mentioned the ark of God, Eli fell off his seat backwards beside the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died, for he was old and heavy, and thus he judged Israel 40 years. Listen to me. Eli lost everything because of his tolerance and his permissiveness. We need to learn this story from Eli. Listen, tolerance is just a rebranding of the word sin. Do you know that? Sin just has a new market director. Tolerance is just a rebranding. It cost him and it will cost us if we don't stand up. God has placed us inside of this city, inside of these families, inside of this nation, inside of this church to be a light and salt and to be a voice, to not sit back and accept everything that comes down, but to stand up and fight for righteousness. Yeah. Let me tell you this story. My wife and I, we were having our fifth child. You guys, I can't even have a minivan. My family is too big for a minivan. So when we had our fifth kid, we had to go, we were looking at some passenger vans that we were going to take because we're that Mormon family now. And and we go to Mossy Nissan over here, and this guy, this salesman comes out to help us, and we tell him, hey, we're looking for a Nissan NV, and he runs, he gets the keys, and he brings us to the back of the lot. Over in this corner is a brand new NV passenger van, and it's kind of like wedged in there pretty good. And he's like, you guys want to try this one out? We're like, absolutely, let's go. So he grabs the keys, he's like, let me pull it out first because it's kind of tight in there, and then I'll give it to you. And I'm like, that's a good idea. I don't want to break it, right? So we jump in. And he starts back, and he's got to wedge it out pretty, it's pretty tight in there. And he's doing a good job, and he's getting it out of the spot. And there's this big backup camera on it. Don't you guys love backup cameras? Make life so easy. And he's backing up, and I can see that there's a pole kind of a ways back. And as he's getting closer and closer to the pole, I think, should I say something? Like, this guy's getting, he's getting close. I mean, it's still a ways off. He knows what he's doing. He's a professional, right? Like, that's embarrassing to have to tell him what he's doing at his own job, right? So I'm just watching it as it gets closer and closer, and then wham! This guy runs a brand new NV into this pole. I mean, the pole's like, the lights are all flailing everywhere. And I think, oh, did you know that, you know, there's a backup camera right here. It was coming, and he's embarrassed. He gets out and looks. He gets back in the car. And he does this wedge, like, until he can get to where he needs to be. And then he's got to drive, reverse down this really long aisle until he can pull out. But by this time, how many of you guys know that this guy is on high alert, right? So we're backing up. And I'm looking at this backup camera. And there's this brand new Nissan Murano. It's a ways back. Like, don't get me wrong. It's a ways back. And I think, should I say something right now? No, there's no way. He's learned his lesson, right? And I'm just kind of like sitting there looking, you know, and here we are gaining speed as he's backing up. And I think, should I say something? I'm not going to. He has to know. He just hit something. I'm not going to. Wham! He hit it going so fast. When we pulled forward, the bumper is laying sideways like this, and the grill to the Murano is completely split. I'm like, oh my gosh. Let me ask this. People do this in life. They crash all over the place emotionally, and where they're going, it's like they run into every roadblock possible. They run down every lie, believe every lie, and find themselves breaking all over the place. And God has put people like us to help them see the roadblocks. The problem is when we don't say anything. This guy didn't need to hit anything. I could have spoke up, but so often we stay quiet. Our friends call us and say, hey, on this vacation we're going on, I just want you to know our kid Johnny is now going to be called Jill. And we don't say anything, or we start seeing what's coming down into our public schools, but we don't go to the union board meetings. We don't go to the PTA meetings. We stay quiet. We just try to do our best with our kids. It's time that we need to stand up and say more than we are as American Christians. I wish that the story was over with the car, but it's not. The guy pulls up, and he's embarrassed. He's like, listen, there's no gas in the car. He really wants to give us this drive in this car. And so he says, I'm going to get the gas card, and he gives me the keys, and he says, why don't you drive? And I say, yeah, because I don't want to die. Thank you. So we drive the car to the gas station. Heather and I are inside the car. We're looking at all of the things that it has, talking about what we like, what we don't like. And, you know, he's just going to go out and he's going to pump the gas. And I just hear him, just kind of like barely hear him say something out loud. He says, "All right, I'm just going to fill this thing up with diesel." This is not a diesel, you guys. And I know now that if I don't speak up, that this guy will 100% ruin this entire vehicle. So I jump out of my car, I jump out of the NV, and I say, wait, you cannot put diesel in. I mean, he's got the nozzle head in, he is fully committed, and he says this, "No, it's a big vehicle, it takes diesel." And I'm like, "Oh, dude, you are so fired." I was like, "You're right, it is a big deal, big vehicle, but see, it says unleaded right there, that means no diesel." I save this guy. Listen, this is my point. This is where we need to be. We need to be speaking out, because at some point, we're gonna have all of these transgender kids wake up, and they're gonna say, "What did my parents allow me to do? What did all the adults in my life allow me to do?" And they've been taking these blocking pills all of their for so long. It's time that we stop worrying about the cost of speaking up, and it's time that we start fighting. I hate that I cry so much now, you guys. I want to read you something. This is out of Eric Metaxas' book. And this is what he says about speaking up. It's in his book, A Letter to the American Church. I encourage you to read it. He's talking about how the German church didn't wake up. They kind of followed Hitler all the way through. They accepted everything. They made adjustments for everything. They tolerated everything. They pretended it wasn't that bad, but it really was that bad. The confessing church wouldn't buy into it, and they fought it, but there wasn't enough of the confessing church. And as everything fell apart and Germany broke down and all of the atrocities were being shown and brought to light, some of these people are like, "Had I only known." They said, "Why didn't someone tell us?" And that's where Eric Metaxas talks about the spiral of silence. I want to read you the spiral of silence. It refers to the idea that when people fail to speak, the price of speaking rises. As a price to speak rises, still fewer people speak out, which further causes the price to rise, so that fewer people yet will speak out until the whole culture or nation is silenced. And this is what happened to Germany. If you don't speak, I want all of us to listen right now. If you don't speak, you are not being neutral, but are contributing to the success of the thing you refuse to name and condemn. Do you guys hear that? If we don't speak up, we're not being neutral, we're actually giving power to the very thing that we don't want. Contrarily, it follows that those who speak out make it easier for others to speak out. Just as cowardice begets cowardice, courage begets courage. When we speak out, we inevitably encourage others to speak out along with us, decreasing the price of speaking out, so there is no way to remain neutral in such situations. Either we help evil or we fight it. I remember in college, my college professor was talking about, it was my oceanography, and he started talking about the origin of life. Do you guys know that has nothing to do with oceanography? He just starts talking about evolution. And just by God chance, I had read a book exactly about what he was talking about. He was talking about the building of proteins inside, that we could actually prove that proteins can just spontaneously, it doesn't matter. And I raised my hand. I said, Mr. Jacobson, you're saying this like it's true, but we can only create three proteins and the smallest protein needs 16 amino acids. I don't remember what I said, because I don't remember that anymore. But I do remember as I spoke up and as I spoke out, he changed his whole lecture. He said, okay, well, you know what? This is oceanography. Let's stick to what we're good at. And I was like, I think that's a great idea. After class, I had multiple people come up to me and thank me for saying something. Listen, we need to say things in our workplaces, to our coworkers. We need to be vocal about what's right. We need to teach our kids and not just pray that God would lead them down the right road. You guys understand? We are the first line of defense against evil, and we need to take it. Let's stand up. We need to not go along with the lies. We need to not agree with the lies. Let's have the band up right now. Should have called them up already. I want to read you a quote from Abraham Kuyper. He's a great theologian. He was the prime minister of the Netherlands. He says this. I want you to just listen to the words. When principles that run against your deepest conviction begin to win the day, then battle is your calling, and peace has become your sin. You must ever, at the price of peace, lay your convictions bare before friend and enemy with all the fire of your faith. Listen, we've all got to make decisions. We all have to make the decision whether we are going to cower like Eli or stand up and fight like the very next man in this Bible, Samuel, who you're going to hear about next week as my dad preaches. See, Eli cowered. He was quiet. But Samuel did not. Make sure you come back to here. Samuel brought the nation together. What are we going to do? What is our time going to be remembered for?